Welcome to the Nuance Concentrated Value Semi-Annual Update Call. My name is James, and I'll be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you have a question, please press star 1 on your phone. Also note this conference is being recorded. I'd now like to turn the call over to Paul Gillespie. Paul, you may begin.
Thanks. Good afternoon, everybody. James mentioned, this is Paul Gillespie, Vice President and Client Portfolio Manager at Nuance Investments. I want to thank everyone for joining us today for our Nuance Concentrated Value Semiannual Update Call. In the email invitation to today's call, there was a link to a presentation that we will be referring to during the call. For any reason, if you do not have the presentation, you can email us at client.services@nuanceinvestments.com. And we'll email it right over to you. Before we begin the discussion today, I do want to let you know that this presentation may include statements regarding the intent, belief, or current expectations of our portfolio management team. Actual results may differ materially from such forward-looking statements due to a number of factors, including changes in general economic conditions, market liquidity, market volatility, and other market, financial, or governmental uncertainties. During the call today, we'll be giving an update on the firm and the team. We will also go through a summary of the investment process and updated performance. We'll conclude our prepared remarks with a review of what's happened so far in 2018 and a discussion on our mid-year 2018 outlook. We will then open up the call for questions. With that, I'll turn the call over to Scott Moore, our President and Chief Investment Officer. Scott.
Thanks, Paul, and thanks to everyone for joining us today. As Paul indicated, on page 2 of the presentation, you can see the agenda, just to reiterate it for this call. As Paul said, first, we'll provide an update on the team as well as our firm. We'll give a review of the first half of 2018, and of course, we will provide some going forward color and an outlook as we move forward. On page 3 is a short summary of Nuance as a firm. From our seed capital in 2008 of about $30 million, the firm has grown today to manage almost $2.1 billion using our classic value investment approach. As you know, we have three products: our concentrated value strategy, which we will be talking about on this call today with about $1 billion, our mid-cap value strategy, which has grown pretty significantly the last couple of years, and today we manage about $1.1 billion. And our newer, youngest product, our Nuance Concentrated Long-Short Strategy. Each of these products is capacity constrained to position Nuance and its clients for future returns, as we believe staying relatively small in asset size is an important competitive advantage versus our peers and our benchmarks over time. I would note, and the folks on this call largely know, that we are in the latter stages of closing the concentrated value strategy to new clients, meaning we will be ceasing selling to new clients. But as all of the clients on this call and prospects on this call know, we will not be closing to our existing clients in any way, shape, or form. Expect a formal communication of some sort by this year end, emphasizing this point for everyone. On page 4, we can head into the team. You can see our investment team has around 70 cumulative years of experience. Importantly, this has been a very stable group who largely grew up on the Nuance investment process and has seen cycles starting from as early as the Nifty 50 and tech boom, the mid to late 90s, of course, the subsequent technology bust, the commodity and finance boom of the mid to late 2000s, and of course, the financial crisis, as well as now, obviously, the 8-9 years of slow but sure economic growth that we've seen in this part of the economic expansion. The process has been around a long time. This team has been using it for a long time, and it's well designed to succeed in achieving long-term risk-adjusted returns for our clients. On page 5, you can see a single-page schematic of our process. The process has not changed since the inception of Nuance, and you can be assured that it won't. That consistency of process is critical to consistent and high-level execution and long-term risk-adjusted returns. The bigger picture summary of the process is that Nuance is a bottoms-up, one-stock-at-a-time investment firm. We are searching for leading business franchises that we define as having number one or number two market share positions with sustainable competitive advantages. Once we have a list of those sustainable, competitively advantaged businesses, we perform an in-depth financial analysis that results in a mid-cycle or normal set of financial statements with this mid-cycle proprietary estimates of earnings, EBITDA, cash flows, dividends, etc. We then perform a rather extensive valuation study on the business. That study emphasizes a true mid-cycle fair value and a true recession-like trough value estimate for each company. The end goal is a group of nearly 250 leading business franchises with sustainable competitive positions with a very clear and rational fair value and trough value framework. And with that information, we can then monitor the very best risk rewards across the investing landscape and optimize your firm or your family's risk reward pretty much on a daily basis. So why is our process different? I get that question asked a lot. Just to kind of give you a little bigger picture thought on why we're a little different. First, we believe that we're more diligent than most in our competitive analysis work and ensuring the sustainability of the go-forward competitive position. Secondly, we believe our mid-cycle estimate process, the more normalized set of financial statements, is more logical and gives us better denominators for calculating our fair and trough values. And then thirdly, our equal emphasis on fair values and trough values, we believe gives us a clearer vision of both risk and reward for each of the stocks that we're purchasing for you and your clients. And we think that gives us an advantage over the long term. So with that backdrop, how has the first 6 months of 2018 gone, and how has our performance been over the long term? Turning to page 6 of the presentation, the first 6 months of 2018 has been a pretty classic late cycle investing period. Valuations in general are not a focus of today's market, in my opinion. The market performance has been very narrow over the last 12 to 18 months, and leverage is considered a plus as opposed to a minus here in these late cycle periods. Given this environment, as many, if not most, of you have heard me discuss over time, you might expect us to struggle during these periods because those traits are the direct opposite of what we're searching for in general over the long term. And indeed, we have underperformed for the first 6 months of the year. Our concentrated value product for the first 6 months is down 2.8% net of fees versus the primary benchmark, down about 1.2%. The primary reason for that underperformance was our underweight in energy, which cost us almost 100 basis points, as well as our overweight in consumer staples, and particularly our holding in Sanderson Farms, one of our favorite stocks today that we've been adding to on weakness, and I will talk more about in just a minute. A summary of the first 6 months is at page 8. For your review. As for the longer term, which of course is what we always emphasize and I know most of our clients are focused on as well, as we approach our 10th anniversary at Nuance on October 31st, we're pleased with our since inception 15.58% net of fee performance versus the Russell 3000 value performance of up 12.51% and the S&P 500 up 4.4%. Lastly, on performance, if you could turn to page 7, you can see our peer group performance. We are fifth percentile from a performance perspective versus the Morningstar large cap value peer group, 30th percentile versus the Morningstar mid cap value peer group, and 15th percentile versus the Lipper multi cap value peer group. Importantly to us, if you look at the middle data column on page 7, which is our standard deviation, which is our primary focus when we think about the risk of our products versus our peers, we are among the least risky products as measured by standard deviation. Putting those two numbers together in the final column gets you a sharp or risk-adjusted return ratio, which has always been our firm's primary performance bogey, yielding a ranking of first percentile across all peer groups since our inception in October of 2008. The final topic today is our 2018 outlook, and I'm going to actually spend a little more time on that than normal. You can turn to page 9 to see those details. First, let's talk about the opportunities we are seeing. The most recent opportunity we talked a little bit about in January of this year on the last semiannual call started showing up in the latter stages of 2017 as an above-average level of catastrophes. Hurricanes and fires in 2017 resulted in significant earnings erosion across the insurance sector, and stock underperformance across that world led to new opportunities. Today, we were able to buy shares in a company like the Travelers Corporation, ticker symbol TRV, a leading small and mid-sized business commercial and property and casualty underwriter at about 11 to 12 times our mid-cycle earnings. We also believe that Everest Re represents an attractive opportunity today, outstanding balance sheet for this leading North American reinsurer, trading at about 10 times our internally derived normalized earnings. Unrelated to the catastrophe losses, but still within the space, we continue to like MetLife. This newly refined and focused life insurance leader has spun off its annuity business. A little bit of confusion, in my opinion, on the market about those financial statements post that spin. On our work, it's trading at about 11 times our normalized earnings, around book value, and has a 3%-ish dividend yield, which are all very strong characteristics versus a pretty expensive market today. All three of these companies have strong market share positions, solid balance sheets, are all under-earning their long-term potential due to transitory issues. The PE multiples kind of in that low teens to 10 times neighborhood is extremely favorable compared to our entire 250 nuance master list of leading business franchises, which today continues to hover around the highest levels we have seen since I began using this process a very, very long time ago at 24 to 25 times our estimate of normalized earnings. So you can see the valuation advantage that these companies have, the transitory nature of what's going on with their earnings power is very attractive to us for these leading franchises, and we're pretty excited about that opportunity. The second opportunity is kind of subtle, but I think has wonderful long-term ramifications to our ability to outperform. One of today's biggest opportunities is the avoidance of mature businesses that are being attacked by technological and new technological capabilities. As we're now about 10 years into this product's life that I'm personally running, it's 25 plus years of experience working in the classic value world, there is a clear acceleration of competitive transitions that have taken place over the last couple of years. In the last year, we have written quite a bit about oil, about middlemen like distribution companies and others that are going through technological shifts that result in the future being far from certain as they were over the last decade or so. We are excited, actually, about this acceleration in competitive transitions as it plays into nuances, and our nuance process strengths quite well. To give you a historical flavor, we have identified here at Nuance things like the telecommunications sector, the newspaper industry, the ATM money exchange sub-industry, the retail industry, the paper industry, the coal industry, and many others. Avoiding these industries and the potential value traps that typically result is a key part of our own processes, competitive advantage versus our peers and benchmarks, and we're pretty excited that that acceleration is here and coming and is really part of our going forward value add model. Next opportunity are more classic one-off stocks, which is, of course, is Nuance's bread and butter. They are always available, although I would suggest to our clients that certainly, there is a lot less than normal today, given the valuation paradigm that we're observing. One example is Dentsply, ticker symbol is XRAY, X-ray, a leading supplier of dental equipment with trailing 12 earnings of about $2.30 to $2.40, while our normal earnings is closer to $2.80. The primary issue causing the under-earnings is a disruption at the dental distribution companies that we also know quite well as they are being attacked by companies primarily like Amazon. This has caused some destocking and a short-term lull in revenue growth for companies like X-ray. With an outstanding balance sheet and recent stock prices in the low to mid-40s, relative to that $2.80 of normalized earnings, we're able to buy the security for you in the 15 to 16 times PE multiple range as we've been adding to the stock on weakness. Versus, again, that nuanced market of 24 to 25 times. It represents an excellent risk-reward in our view. The other one off sockeye we mentioned, I talked about it briefly just a minute ago, Sanderson Farms, ticker symbol SAFM, a leading and low-cost provider of poultry products based in the Southeast, with most of their sales occurring in the Southeast, southeastern part of the country. Recent spikes of feed costs, along with some price-fixing issue fears in the industry, which are repetitive and recurring over a long, long period of time, decades and decades, has resulted in earnings being under pressure for the entire poultry sub-industry. Within that poultry world and that protein world, Sanderson is our favorite within the space. The company has net cash on the balance sheet. Today, they're earning around $7 a share, and we think normal is closer to 10. Trading at around $100, we are buying this well-positioned food provider, protein provider at 10 times unlevered earnings, again, versus what we're seeing at the market at 24 to 25 times. Feels like an outstanding risk-reward as a one-off opportunity for our portfolio and for our clients. The last opportunity I would mention is cash. We have, I didn't write that actually in the presentation, but I wanted to mention it. We've got a few clients concerned with our 20 to 25% cash levels, but as we've discussed with all of those concerned clients, that cash is an opportunity in our view. This opportunity relates to that entire group of 250 nuanced leaders, which we see as being significantly overvalued. Remind yourself that that risk reward today is about 25% downside to fair value for the entire list. And if we were to have a recessionary environment, which are normal, and we do have them from time to time, the downside could be as much as 60 to 65%. We are not suggesting that a market downturn is imminent, but we do suggest that it appears the market is not considering risk items that are very apparent today, potential recessions, debt levels at the corporate and government level being well above historical averages, and valuations also being at historically high levels. As a result, opportunities are limited, and during these periods, we typically will diversify your portfolio and raise cash that can be put to better work at better valuations. So as such, your portfolio's number of holdings has grown to 33 names over the course of the last year or so versus normal, which is around 25. And the simplest way for our clients to understand our cash is that we view it as a security. It has a risk reward. The risk reward of cash today is plus 1 to 2% versus basically 0% downside. Comparing that to our group of 250 leaders of minus 25 and minus 60, and you start to understand why we view cash as an opportunity. We treat it like a security, and frankly, it just has a very good risk reward today versus the other market opportunities. The bottom line is the opportunity set is very narrow these days, and the upside potential is quite limited. On a positive note, we are quite excited about the spread between our portfolio's risk reward and the market opportunity risk reward. We want to make sure our clients are very clear, however, about the upside potential that exists today based on our work. So last thing to talk about are the risks. I've alluded to a lot of those in my recent comments, but I want to get into a little bit more detail. I wrote a great deal this quarter about the risks we are seeing in the marketplace, and I will summarize those writings today. The big picture message that I believe we are clearly in a late cycle market environment, and there are certain traits that I have observed and my team has observed during these periods that often don't fit well with our process. That said, these periods have historically set us up for a potential outstanding period once sentiment changes. So what are these traits? There's three of them that I've observed and I've been watching for. First, valuations don't matter. We've been talking about that a little bit. Secondly, there's a very narrow market. So performance is very concentrated in specific areas that the market deems almost easy to invest in. And finally, and really shockingly, considering we just had the financial crisis, leverage is once again loved on all fronts across most spaces. So let's take these one at a time. Valuation not being a focus of the market in general, I'll reiterate that our nuanced master list, the group of 250 leaders, the mid-cycle PE ratio, mid-cycle earnings, mid-cycle normalized financial statement earnings, PE ratio, has expanded from 9 to 10 times in 2009 to a historically high level of 24 to 25 times today. That is an enormous amount of valuation multiple expansion. We hope our clients can understand why we currently believe patience is valid and concerns about risk are very valid. One example, One Gas Incorporated, an Oklahoma-based natural gas distributor that we've been following for a long time, an excellent company at normal earnings power in the low threes. The P/E ratio for OGS, that's the ticker symbol, is in the low to mid-20s on a P/E basis, which is a historical high on any measure within a range for a natural gas distribution company that is as low as 10, 11, 12 times and as high as right where we are today in that 20 to 25 times. All of this for a very slow-growing Oklahoma-based utility with a leveraged balance sheet and high single-digit ROEs, think 8%, very low, barely earning their cost of capital. That's a regulatory thing. But to have a P/E ratio that high for this type of company is pretty extraordinary. The important point is that OGS is just one example of a broad-based valuation issue that appears somewhat misunderstood by many in the marketplace who are focused on politics and FANG stocks in isolation. Second trait of late cycles is that the market is very narrow and the general sentiment is investing is relatively easy these days. It's an interesting phenomenon that we've observed over a very long period of time. And the idea is that if you just put your money in these narrow pockets of outperformance, you're going to be in good shape. Narrowness of performance clearly proliferates today in the FANG stock world, in the technology sector, and also in the consumer discretionary spaces of the world. Areas of the world that we don't see competitive advantages, that's the consumer discretionary space, or we see serious valuation issues, and that's in the technology space today. To give you a little bit of numbers, as one example, from 12/31 of 16, which is my personal estimate of when all of this late cycle stuff began, to 6/30 of 2018, the S&P 500 index was up 25%, 25.05 to be exact. The Russell 3000 Value Index is up 11.8. The New York Stock Exchange FANG Plus Index is up a very impressive 104.76%. And the S&P 500 Information Technology Sector GICS Level 1 Index is up 53.92%. I think that's probably narrow enough for all of us to understand just how narrow the window of performance is today. And that is a trait that is consistent with late cycle market activities. We might remind our clients what happened post the late cycle periods in the late 1990s and the 2005 to 2007 period. I can assure all of you that it wasn't pretty for those very loved narrow spaces once sentiment changed. The full details of all of this discussion actually is in the June commentary for concentrated value, and I would encourage everybody to read and get a real idea of commonalities that we're seeing here throughout the last couple of late cycle periods. The final trait of late cycles is one that I've been writing about really for the last year or so. Leverage is oddly low during late cycles. It feels like the market will really never learn about this phenomenon. It's very surprising to me. But the bottom line is today, corporations are heavily levered versus the historic past. For the non-utility, non-finance world, we have seen historical net debt to EBITDA levels 1.5 to 2 times. Today, we're 2.5 to 3 times in general, very heavily levered versus their histories. The U.S. government is more levered than at any time in history. States are struggling in a general state of leverage. And, of course, the rest of the world's leverage is also near peaks in general terms. Not all of them, but a lot of them. So there is leverage proliferating on a very broad scale, which, if anything, has us more concerned than we typically do when we can isolate the leverage into a particular area. For example, the financial crisis leverage, most of the leverage was in large banks and mid-sized banks, so you could isolate the leverage. This time, it's a little broader based, and I would suggest that we all should be cognizant of that. I won't go into more detail on this call, but suffice to say we have a lot of experience here at Nuance in seeing the volatility of security prices when leverage is part of the issue during any negative news period. You might all take a look at Diebold Corporation's stock chart, ticker symbol DBD. It's a name that I've personally followed for a very, very long time. We haven't owned it for also a very, very long time because of competitive issues as well as leverage issues. But they have a recent news item that suggested a difficult earnings period that has caused them to have to renegotiate their debt covenants. It's an interesting chart, to say the least. Diebold might just be a message to the leverage community of what can happen if all doesn't go right. And we all might remember that even the very best companies will not be doing everything right and doing well all the time. So in conclusion, overvaluation across the board is the largest risk, clearly, except for a few isolated spots of opportunity, which we feel very comfortable about and excited about, the ones we've identified. The most positive note is we are very excited about the spread between our portfolio's risk rewards and that of the market risk rewards today, but want to make sure our clients are clear related to the upside potential that exists based on our work. As such, patience continues to be our mantra. Patience to either allow earnings and EBITDA to grow into their current valuations, or patience to allow a correction to happen. Thank you all for your continued confidence and support. And with that, I will open it up to any questions that our clients may have.
Thank you. We're now going to begin our question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your phone. If you wish to be removed from the question queue, press the pound sign or the hash key. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, press star 1 on your phone. And, gentlemen, it looks like we have no questions.
Okay. Well, James, thank you, and thanks, everybody, for joining us today. Just as a reminder, for more information about Nuance and to stay up to date on our strategies, please visit our website, where our commentary that Scott referred to is located as well. So thank you again.
Excuse me, Paul. We did just get a question in from Jenny McVee.
Okay, great.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Perfect. So you mentioned that you're considering closing the fund, but to new investors, but over the past 36 months, you've had almost $100 million in outflows in the mutual fund. Can you touch on that, and would that affect your decision going forward?
Yes, where we're at right now is we're between $950 and $1 billion. Off of our highs by in the neighborhood of $50 to $100 million. Really, those numbers, plus or minus $100 million or so, doesn't change our view. If for some reason we did get a market correction and we started getting into the $800 million range, then we would just simply restart the selling process to outside clients. I think the most important thing to remember is not to get too confused about this closing process. There will be no closing to our existing clients. So this is really only about stopping the selling to new clients. And once we get into that $800 to $900 million range, we will just simply start selling again to potentially new clients. So I hope that answered your question.
It did. Thank you.
And once again, if you have a question, press star 1. And once again, there are no questions.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us today.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.